What's happening, guys? Happy Tuesday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. Coming up on today's show, I'm going to discuss a number of things all pertaining to UFC 300, not to mention a little back and forth we saw between Tom Aspinall, your interim champion, and John Jones himself, the undisputed heavyweight champion. Guys, as a matter of fact, let's begin right there. John Jones, so I gotta tell you, by the way, do I say that funny? Do I say John Jones funny? John Jones, does that sound funny? He was making fun of me. He was teasing me that I said that it's like a high voice. John Jones. And it's rather funny when he says it, because he has a certain delivery and charm. But is it true? Do I squeak out that name, John Jones? All right, now, we have been telling John, we is the critics. It's the naysayers and the haters. We have been telling John from the beginning, stop acting, be yourself. And it was to the point that it bothered John. John said, hey, I'm not a bad guy. I love Jesus. He said that one time. When people were encouraging him to steer into a certain direction, he said, I can't do it. I can't be the heel. I love Jesus. And he really felt it. And other people that are knowing him going, yeah, but this is dull. This is boring. This young boy chasing a dream. And, you know, there's something there, the youngest ever champion. Like, there is something there, but it's just a miss. And so many times, John, when somebody would say, that's fake, come out and be yourself, he thought he was being insulted. Because the person the character that he was playing was such a good guy that he thought when people come out and said, hey, be yourself, that they meant be yourself, be a bad guy, be the opposite of that. And he's going, hey, what do you think I'm such a jerk for? It's one of these situations, but he wasn't totally right. First time that John ever got a little taste of the other side, a little taste of what people have been telling him to do from a PR, just from a marketing perspective. Hey, you're so good. Now let's start selling some tickets. First time ever was almost on accident. He was at a press conference. He had served a suspension. And within that suspension was the cocaine test that was positive. And I have to say that because I think a lot of people think that John served a suspension for cocaine. I don't believe that's correct. I know that that test came in positive, but I'm not certain he served a suspension for it. I don't think that street drugs were really under the purview, at least at that time, and certainly aren't today. Now it's anything goes within Nevada State Athletic Commission. So I think that you might be remembering that wrong, but I bring it to you because this was John's first time back after everything that had gone down. He's at a press conference live, and this thing is packed. And we've had press conferences in front of 80 people. We've had press conferences in front of 8,000 people, and this was closer to the 8,000. It was packed. Daniel Cormier, John Jones, one of the hottest feuds. And John had made a comment. He didn't want to do it. He wanted to stay away from this. He didn't want anything to do with any of these commissions and tests and any of that side. He's got to sit here and face the music, right? John said, well, I haven't done it. I haven't touched anything in 15 months. Whatever the time frame was. But 15 months, sake of the story. And the crowd cheers. They cheered him. 15 months of alleged sobriety. And Daniel takes him. Daniel can't believe it. Daniel said, hey, wait a minute. You're cheering this guy. He said he hadn't taken cocaine in 15 months. I haven't taken it ever in my life. Assuming that he would get the big applause and the crowd booed him. And there was no one more surprised than Daniel. Daniel's up there getting booed for saying, I've never done this. You all just told him it was great that he hadn't done it in 15 months. I'm letting you know I haven't done it in 35 years. And they booed him. And the only person more surprised than Daniel at that reaction was John Jones. And John then said, he went right with it. It was the first time ever. John's caught off guard, right? I mean, this psychology going through. And I know that John's caught off guard because I'm a viewer. I'm caught off guard. None of us saw this coming. The crowd did a turn. I mean, literally, The Rock just went through this. The Rock just went through this identity crisis where generally he is dictating and letting the crowd know, and he knows ahead of time exactly what the crowd's reaction is going to be. For the first time possibly in his career, The Rock got it wrong. Well, the first time in John's career, John got it wrong. But in a positive way. He thought they were going to hate him and was nervous to go out there. They end up loving him. They loved him. And for the first time, John goes with it. And John says to Daniel Cormier, yeah, I did all that stuff. I partied nonstop. I was high on cocaine and I still kicked your ass. And they lost their mind. And you should have seen Daniel, right? Daniel's smart. He's fast. Daniel's a thinker. Daniel's playing this thing out. Nobody saw that. And I couldn't tell you very many lines for press conferences ever. I might be able to pull one out from over myself. Conor versus Floyd had some good moments. Colby and Leon had the hot spot. But I mean, in all of time, it's hard to pull out something somebody said. I remember that press conference because we were all so surprised. Now, where am I going and what is my point? Well, when we tell John, be yourself. Stop pretending. Stop with the Jesus and all the... Be yourself. Be young. Be brash. Be the guy that goes out, stays up late, and still comes in and kicks everybody's ass. Be that guy. We saw that guy briefly over the weekend. And it was a spot where John was not planning to be filmed. It was a conversation that John was not planning to have. And that adds to the organicness. But this adds to the real John. Part that he's always had wrong is when we make the statement, be the real John, he thinks we're insulting him. It's not always an insult, right? It's very compelling. Tom Aspinall met the real John Jones. So Tom comes up. What happened before this in the context of the pretense, I don't know. The establishing shot of what I saw is they are now face to face. And it's at some type of an event. Somebody's putting on a something. They've both been invited. They come across. And Tom could not have been more of a gentleman. And he seemed happy to meet John Jones. To a degree. Right? Tom's got his ego and he's got his pride. He knows this is a future competitor. But Tom's younger. It's as simple as that. There's nothing more on it than that. Tom is younger. When John Jones won his first world championship, and that would have been, let's see, if he's 35 now, do the math, but I mean, you're talking about 12 to 13 years ago. Tom is a seventh grader. Tom is an eighth grader. He's a freshman in high school, right? But it's something like this. So he is looking up to John, for sure. Something he probably hasn't told the public and probably doesn't want to tell the public, but he's looked up to John. Even if he now has met the master and feels that he's got to kill him, right? It's the oldest martial arts story in the book. Even if that's where we are now, he's still meeting the guy that helped to inspire him all those years ago. And you could see that in Tom. I mean, that was the real Tom. You think Tom looked like a nice guy in that? It turns out Tom's a nice guy. That was the real Tom. And the real Tom shook John's hand and took his other hand and put it on John. At which point, the real John took that hand off and told him, don't put that hand on me. And it was the eyes of John Jones. That's what you got to go back and notice. And when I say it was the real John Jones has had a level of success that is difficult to understand. And it's difficult to understand because there's nobody else that you can ask about it. Nobody else has had it. And sometimes a guy will come along 20, 30 years ago, and he'll have written a book by then, or he'll have done a biography. And even if he changes the story, like everybody does that ever writes a book or a biography, you still get a good understanding and a good glimpse. Because John is in it and living it right now, record set. He's already set the record for youngest. He might set the record for oldest when he's done. Could you imagine if he did that? Could you imagine if he bookended the youngest champion and the oldest champion ever? It's game over at that point. For who the GOAT was. It is game, and it's not him right now. It is GSP, and I can make that argument. I'll win all of you over. Now, many people would argue Khabib, and you get a back and forth on that. But it is not John right now. If he bookends that, and he's on his way to booking, I mean, but just think about that. So when you have this level of success of John, how? How does he stay motivated? Why? Why is he pushing through? Why did he take 3 years off out of the prime of his career to get to a different weight class just so he could win a belt there too while taking a much larger risk? Why? And then you saw it. You saw it in that moment. That was the real John. You saw it in his eyes in that moment when he reached over and took that hand off. There is something within him, whether we have it or we can hope to bring it out in ourselves. He has it. Muhammad Ali had made a statement one time. It was a very funny quote that sticks around to this day. Muhammad Ali told a guy, if you even dream of beating me, I want you to wake up and apologize. And when you saw John take the hand off his shoulder and John told him, don't put your hand on my shoulder, when you saw that, that was the 2024 embodiment of Muhammad Ali saying, if you even dream you can beat me, wake up and apologize. John Jones was face to face, not with a threat. Tom was being very nice. John was not face to face with a rival or a soon to be opponent. It doesn't look like they're going to cross paths. The story goes the way the story's been told. John Jones was face to face with a fellow competitor who has seen what he can do and decided that he, being Tom, could do it better. And just like Muhammad Ali said, if you even dream you can beat me, you wake up and apologize. John is face to face with a guy, and John can't make sense of it. Is this guy crazy? He's seen what I could do since he was a kid, and he thinks he could do it better than me. And you saw that competitor. And that answers so many questions of what drives John. What keeps him hungry? What keeps him around? How can he still do it? Why does he still do it? Because he's still that competitor. And where you might see the youngest ever, and maybe he's getting ready to book credit, maybe he's the greatest of all time, and chailing his GSP and his Khabib argument, and I could trump that, with all of those things. John doesn't see that. Not yet. But he wants to. That's what has kept him hungry. And that is why he didn't want that hand on his shoulder. And that was a glimpse at the real John Jones. Ian Gary, Colby Covington, is there any turning back now? I mean, why would you want to? It's a really interesting spot. It's an interesting spot because getting Colby interested in a fight for anybody that wasn't the world champion has been wildly difficult to do. I mean, even when he took a hiatus to fight Masvidal, but there was a lot on that, right? Not to mention Masvidal was the BMF champion. Not to mention it was going to be a pay-per-view and it was going to be a main event. I mean, there was a few things that were on it. It's hard. And Colby has been the clearest number one contender of any weight class. Of any weight class, it is more obvious that he was the next best guy to the champion. Okay. And I only tell you that because, I mean, they're fighting to prove things to each other, right? If you prove enough things, we put a belt around you. But whatever you're setting out to prove, the sportsmanship of the sport is that you acknowledge that it's been proven. I mean, I'm just sharing that with you. Colby, on December 16th, understood. I mean, he understood. He came out of there with a very different attitude, which is my next fight will not be a title fight. And therefore, why wait? I mean, it was a totally different attitude. Colby had a broken foot that night. He's heartbroken. I mean, this is terrible. But the cameras are still running. He still has a job to do. And he did a call out. Remember that, guys? It was of Wonder Boy. Wonder Boy fought that same night, same weight class. I could tell Colby had never considered losing that fight. Because the Wonder Boy call out, it didn't make any level. That wasn't the direction he was going to go. His creativity was of such, with the broken foot distraction, the broken heart that he was dealing with, that he, that guy. I mean, he just got an idea and goes with Wonder Boy. But there was still a message in that. And the message was that Colby wants Wonder Boy. The message was Colby wants back in there, and Colby is going to have a different attitude coming in and doing other fights that don't revolve around waiting. Okay. And I knew when he called, right then I knew when he called Wonder Boy that wasn't the direction that he just opened his eyes. And it was like the first guy that he saw, right? I mean, it really was like this type of a thing. Ian Garry has a fight. This timeline matters. Ian Garry fought last, right? Colby's back in December. Ian Garry was Anaheim, guys, 2 pay-per-views ago. 4.5 weeks. Ian Garry has a great win over Jeff Neal. A lot of people watching. Highest-ranked guy Garry fought. Split decision. Garry dealing with all the things that Gary's dealing with. He takes that microphone. He called out Colby Covington. And whoever Garry wanted to fight, who he really wanted to fight, because right, he had a little venom going Sean Strickland's way. But whoever he really wanted to fight was the name that he was going to say in that moment, and he did, and it was Colby. Fine. The reason that you need to understand that timeline is because Colby let it go. As I said, that was 5.5 weeks ago. Well, 5 weeks ago, meaning 4 days ago, Colby makes his own promo video, and he calls out Garry. But not only does he call him out, he calls him out with stipulations, with criteria, which just make the call out great. It was a mean-spirited call out, right? It was the way you pick a fight. It was great. But what was really wonderful about it, and I feel as though this kind of the psychology here went unnoticed. If you watched Colby call Garry out, it was not in response to Gary's call out, which is what we've been waiting on. Garry called Colby out. Let's hear what Colby says. Colby did not respond to the call out. Colby's call out was as though it was a fresh and brand new idea. Right, the one that's responding doesn't get to lay out the criterion, just for example. So it was great. And then we have Ian Garry's response, which I must tell you was just as great. I mean, if you're looking for the idea of performance and PR and how am I going to do this, and I really do feel like Garry has gotten some very bad advice. Whoever advised him here, and maybe it was himself, maybe it was just off the cuff and he didn't need it, but whoever advised him here, whatever I've ever said bad about them in the past, I take it back. They have redeemed themselves because this was perfect. But when Garry responded to Colby, he responded in the tone himself as though he had forgotten that he's the one that started this whole thing by calling him 5 weeks early. Right? It was just great. I'm watching this go, wait a minute. I think Colby has actually convinced Garry that this was Colby's idea. It was just interesting. It's my only point. It was just interesting. But here you have Garry, who has been in a crisis. He has been in a PR crisis. Star. I got to be at Garry's last 2 fights. His fight in Boston, I've told you guys several times, this guy, this was off the charts. I mean, it would be the biggest pop of the year. Now, it was also the biggest crowd, 17,000 plus, but it was the biggest pop of the year, and I would have told you that, and he would have won that award had Sean O'Malley not been on the same card. Garry was second on the night, but second on the night was still one of the biggest pops of 2023. It was amazing. But I then was at his most recent fight in Anaheim. And it was not that same pro Garry crowd, right? I mean, he's dealing with something. So the question is, a young man like this, how is he going to deal with it? Is it going to affect him? You would think that a fighter, so what would I care about some boost? They care. It's very hard for me to explain. Like on one hand, I can make a very good case for you how these MMA fighters are the toughest people in the world. But I could also have to concede back to you, but boy, they are some sensitive little babies. Well, not Garry. I mean, Garry really held well with it. Now, he can walk through this whole thing and be done with it as long as he keeps Sean Strickland and Colby Covington's name out of his mouth, because they're the only two that have any kind of a flame left to this. Everybody else has moved on. So if Garry goes after Sean Strickland or Colby Covington, is Garry, by Garry's own choice, who is electing to continue this story that we all believed was this terrible story for him? Well, apparently, not as terrible as we all thought, because he did elect to keep that going. And that's very fascinating. I mean, I must tell you. So now you've got Garry, who has never lost. I mean, think about how long that is. His last loss, how old is he? Is he 26? Okay, great. Then he hasn't lost in 26 years. I mean, think about that. If a guy is undefeated, then however old he is how many years since he's lost. Colby lost in December. So what do you do? Can you take a guy who hasn't lost in 26 years and put him against a guy that lost 3 months ago? Because don't forget, the guy that lost 3 months ago is ranked ahead of him. He's got a bigger name. I think the story works. I think it absolutely works. But I think the fact that Gary was one of the most hated guys in the sport, for whatever, right or wrong, I'm not really sure what Gary ever did wrong, but you will concede back to me that, yes, it was not going his way in terms of opinion and perception and welcomeness and getting that nice fuzzy feeling, right? And however low he was, Colby, in his call-up, made sure to go lower, right? Like, every story's got a good guy and a bad guy. So you could take two bad guys. You could take two heels and put them together. One of them is going to be cheered. There is not a scenario, and this is a broad stroke, you'll find, but there's not a scenario where the crowd wants to boo this guy and boo this guy. The crowd wants to cheer for somebody. So adversely, they will boo the other guy. And the other guy didn't have to do anything wrong. I mean, I'm just sharing for you because the guys don't understand this. They all want to be more liked than the other guy. You're not going to be more liked than the other guy. One of you is going under, one of you is going over. So I only bring that to you because Colby might be the only guy that could lighten Gary up. Which is also fascinating, which I think is something Gary would want, which I think would add to a motivation for him to pursue this fight. Look, I think Colby and Gary are going to fight. That's my final analysis. I think that they're going to fight. And if they fight and it is not a main event, which means it's only 15 minutes, right? Like, you got to be careful what you ask for because you just might get it. Gary has a big problem on his hands if he gets locked in there with Colby Covington. He has a big problem. But I believe he has a bigger problem if that match is scheduled for 15. Now, I won't make as though Colby doesn't have his cat. That's a hard night out. Got to go in, got to get inside, got to get that guy down, got to keep him there. Nobody else has done either of those two things. They haven't gotten him down, they haven't kept him down. I'm shy. I mean, I admit that's a really hard night. But I don't think, regardless of the fact that one is undefeated and one lost his last fight, I don't think there's any reason that we should believe that the odds makers aren't going to have that close. I think there's any reason that we shouldn't think that that's going to be an anticipated fight. And I don't think there's any reason that we should not, if we're the decision makers, move forward and make the fight. Islam Makhachev has spoken, which, by the way, I can't encourage enough. It's almost to the point where I want to ask nicely, like, I want to say, please. Hey, please, Islam, do more of that. I could live with a weekly show of Islam. Even something silly just lives on the internet, 10 or 15 minutes of Islam. Islam's breakdown, Islam thoughts, Islam's training. He's very secretly funny, and so's Khabib. They secretly have a way of viewing things. And when you get them to speak on it, it's almost heel. But it's done so nicely that everybody misses it. I mean, they miss that it's a heel move. Islam Makhachev is one of the great heels in this sport. But he's keeping it to himself, and I wish that he won it. Because it's great. Hey, let me just give you an example. I'm give you a little example that I'm gonna bring you up to 15 minutes ago. Along the way, Islam, and he, speaking about dealing with Charles specifically, said there's too many black belts in this sport. I cannot believe how many people have a black belt. A lot of people need to give their black belt back. And this got, whoa, the media, they went right on this. Hey, what do you mean by that? Islam said, I don't have a black belt. I grapple all the time. I don't have a black belt. But I can destroy all these guys that do. And not just I can destroy them at fighting. I can tap them out. They will never tap me out. I can start in any position they want. I will get out of the position and I will then beat them on the ground. They need to give their black belts back. That is so wildly interesting to, right? Because you got two sects. You've got the viewer, the public, but then you got the locker room, right? You got the actual competitors. Where a belt rank and a belt system is so wildly important and respected by all, including your enemies, including other disciplines. A karate black belt, the taekwondo guy is going to think mine is worth more, but he will respect it if you have a black. He just will, whether he wants to or not. So for Islam to come out and say this, not to mention he was the first, and say you need to start giving belts back, I just wish he would have stayed on that. Then he got in the match with Charles. Charles had been submitted before, and I want to say maybe it was even like 8 times. Charles' submissions are so damn good, and he had so many submissions, but he had a number against himself where he tapped. And Khabib and Islam had a huge problem with that. How can you say you're a black belt if you've tapped out 8 times? How can you ever tap out and be a black belt? Now, I think that's a pretty tough litmus test. I'm just sharing you these things were spoken. And they were fine. And they went one ear and out the next, but they shouldn't have. They shouldn't have. That's a heel move. It's just Islam said it in a very charming way. He has a demeanor. But he was speaking today. And see, I wish he would have stayed on that to where he would tell his opponents, I will bring the gold belt and I'll put it up. What's that mean? That means if you beat me, you take the belt. I no longer have a gold belt. But I want you to bring your black belt. And if I beat you, you give it back. You give it to your professor. You say, I'm not a black belt. And you go back to brown. I wish that he would have stayed with that. That is an extremely interesting angle. And Islam is now coming out today, and he was talking about Gaethje, who, by the way, he likes. He said, Gaethje versus Max, this is a waste of time. It does nothing for anybody. They're fighting for a useless belt that means nothing. It doesn't help anyone. Holloway's not in the division, so he's not going to get to me. Gaethje deserves me right now. So if Gaethje wins, he only gets what he already should be getting. If he loses, he's old news, and I got to go give a look back to Sakaria and Charles, both of which, who I've beat. This is Islam talking. This is a heel. Nobody thought it was a heel. Nobody called him on that. Nobody gave him the thumbs down on social media. They liked it. It was fine. It was done through a translator, and some of the words were typed out on the screen. It was kind of cute the way he said it. I wish he would say more, and I wish he would keep going, because he means all of those things. He's not performing for you. He means it completely, that he can't understand how a guy can tap out and stay a black belt. He didn't understand how a guy can be a black belt in the first place and have somebody like him. And then he did that to Charles, by the way. He blew past his guard, and he tapped him out. He said he should not have a black belt in the very first place, that I can destroy him in grappling. He should not have a belt that I don't have. And then he went out and he tapped him out. He said he was going to do it, and then he went and did it. I mean, I'm just sharing for you, like, if anyone else had done this, they would be getting so much attention. And now they're talking to Islam. Or rather, they talked to Islam about fighting Leon at 170. And Islam wanted to do it. But Islam is saying, hey, can you move that? For religious reasons, within Ramadan, he could not do the fight. So he wanted to move it a couple of weeks. They said, man, no, that's not the deal. It's very specific. And now they're not looking to do it at all, and they're already looking at different opponents for Leon. They're already looking at different opponents for Islam. But I do share with you, like, the idea of Islam at 170 is an important concept that Islam pursue. It really is. I mean, Islam makes a perfectly fair point that he is not going to want to just keep fighting the same guys over and over. Like, if it's between Charles and Sakara and both of them who he's beat, he doesn't want to keep fighting them over and over. So he's willing to fight Poirier. He wants to fight Justin, but now Justin's about to risk it against Holloway. He's going, man, that's a mess. Like, it was just an interesting spot. I mean, not for nothing, but he could use an opponent. Leon would make a lot of sense. Islam's a big guy. Islam has the same problem at 155 that Khabib has, which is making 155. He has never had an opponent that takes as much out of him as the scale does the day before, the same as Khabib. So the idea that of Islam either getting all the members and all the money that he needs somewhere in his next 5 fights, which is going to represent a little less than 2 years, and calls it a career, or the young Islam is going to have to be a 170-pounder. And that's not just about champ status. That's about, I can't make 155 anymore. Let me be responsible to my body, to understanding, and to the organization, to tell you guys up front, I can't just keep making this weight. And so I really do like the idea of Leon. I just can't predict for you that they're going to go back to it. And for Islam to get that fight, it's going to take some work by Leon, and you're just not going to see that. Now, Leon would understand it because he wants to do it. Leon has been talking about, I mean, even had his brother come out, was talking in an interview last week, that Leon himself would like to go to 85, like just to try the champ thing. That will not happen for Leon. But what I'm saying is Leon does understand it. Like, he wouldn't begrudge it if Islam came up. Right, he wouldn't mind giving somebody the chance because he wants somebody to give him a chance. He would get that. But it's not something he's going to pursue because he keeps to just go start calling out smaller guys. It's one of these spots where that match actually makes a lot of sense. And it would have checked a lot of boxes for 300, but I don't know that it works at 301. Right? One thing about being the feature match for 300, in terms of what was being worked on, right? There's a work on, there's a settle period, there's a what's realistic, there's a what can I get agreed to. But in terms of what was being worked on, the criteria for 300 is that you couldn't do it at 299 and you couldn't do it at 301. Right? It was something special. It has to be there. And I think that is where Islam versus Leon falls. But I think Islam does have a hard time making 155. I think if he was offered a shot at 170 once, he could put a compelling argument to make it again. I would understand on a human level why he would not want to fight Charles or Sakarin again. I mean, these guys want to go rack up memories and start to build a legacy. It's hard to get them with the same guy. Right? He's already done Charles. They want to do Charles again. He did Volkanovski, ended up having to do Volkanovski again. It's one of these situations where Islam is going to be reactive. His phone is going to ring one day, and he's going to answer, and he's going to say yes. And whatever comes through is going to be done for whatever reason, including integrity to the sport. Like, every now and then, it's not all the time, but every now and then, we will show an integrity to the rankings. We'll show an integrity to the sport. Then we'll get back to the entertainment. We'll get back to the business side of it. And then just enough, we'll go back to the integrity of the rankings so we don't ever get called on that. And then we'll go back to the entertainment. Right? It's one of these things. But if Islam does not do a good enough job of building an interest in a direction that he wants to go, then he will be asked to go in a certain direction. And once that ask comes, you're not going to get him off it. When that ask comes, the idea for groupthink and for a better idea is too late. It's a whole new test now. Now it's, do we have a guy that's a team player? Do we have a guy that will do what we ask? Or do we have a guy giving us a hard time? Right? I mean, that's the category you fall into. And some of the boys don't understand this. There's no other way to do it. You're right. I mean, you're moving this fast. Your phone, it's nonstop. Well, you got to make decisions. You got to go quick. It's one of these things where I think that Islam's got a very good case, and I think Islam is great at making his case. I think Islam is a very interesting and entertaining guy. I just don't know that he sees it. I don't know that that's what he wants to do. And I don't know that you guys have encouraged him enough. So if you agree with me, get behind him and get on it and make your voices heard right now. You want to hear from Islam? You want to hear who Islam wants to fight and why he wants to fight him? You want him out there pleading his own case? Encourage him to do so right now before it's too late. Sakarian Oliveira, who do you think's the favorite? Who do you have in that? So, I'm going to spoil it for you, but Sakarian's a little over 2-1. And just to put that in perspective for you, it's been a meaningful amount of time since Oliveira was an underdog at all. But the first time Oliveira fought Islam for the vacant championship, regardless of how you remember that, was for the vacant championship. Islam was the 3-1 favorite.
Okay.
Sakarian is a 2.5, 245 to be exact, but he's 2.5-1. 2.5, Islam was only 3-1. I mean, what are you saying? What are the odds makers saying? If I book Sakarian versus Islam right now, and by the way, haven't they already fought? Would that be a rematch? Or have they not met up yet? Because at a minimum, by the odds makers, it would seem as though that's a pretty close fight. Do you guys agree with that? They have the common opponent, and Bobby Green went about the same way. And I know people love to tell me MMA math doesn't work. MMA math works all the time. It is the most scientific thing often that we have to go off of. It's not an absolute. There's a reason they don't just mail the belts and the checks out. There's a reason that they go out there and do the fight, but MMA math works all of the time. So, I remember where I was. Got a call from Ben Folks. No, I apologize. Stephen Morocco calls me. Was the year around 2012? somewhere right in there means it could have been 11. It could have been 13. I remember where I was. I was outside of a sandwich shop about to get a tuna melt for my Aunt Paulette that I was going to take over to her in Canby, Oregon, when Stephen Morocco calls me and wants my opinion on the announcement. Getting a call from Henry Cejudo. Henry, I'll call you right back. Get an announcement that matches that are main events, regardless of title status, if they're a main event, they will be five rounds. And that hadn't been tested very many times. Like, as far as big business for a pay-per-view that was not a title fight, Rashad Rampage did great. MGM, $5 million gate. Now, they had the biggest marketing vehicle our industry's ever seen, the Ultimate Fighter, behind it. But it was just rare that you could find a main event on a pay-per-view that wasn't for a title. So, as in often and as infrequently as this had been tested, as the UFC was starting to expand and go into shows and programs that were not pay-per-view, they adopted this new format or policy that main events, regardless of title implication, would be five rounds. And the reason that I tell you that I remember this so well, I hadn't read about it yet. Steven called me. He assumed I had. He assumed I had heard. He was actually the one informing me. And I remember right there, and I had never gone against the company, anything the company said, anywhere they had gone, right? Because I understood they're always right. They keep making these claims. They're changing our sport. Our sport's getting better. We got more weight classes, more opportunity, and bigger arenas, and the commission stepping in. They're doing a better job. There's more regulation, which just made it better. So this was the first time I said, Stephen, there's no way. I said, Stephen, that will not hold up. You're asking somebody to do 70% more. And I'm just sharing, nowhere in life. Could you demand that somebody who's already under contract, that could you demand that just selectively one night, should you reach the point where you want to reach, which is the last fight of the night, the main event, that you're going to then do 70% more? I said, that won't work. Won't work. The boys will revolt. I remember thinking that was just my first reaction. And that is not what happened. In fact, I've never heard anybody complain. I've never heard anybody say anything. And I bring this to you to tell you the history of it. Because five rounds for me is a bizarre concept. And I realize that it's where our sport is at. I don't begrudge it. That is not the hill that I want to die on. That's not even an issue I want to take on. I'm sharing for you, prior to this, any of this happening, much like when Stephen called me and wanted my guess to what was going to happen, I would have had it wrong. I would have had it wrong. Five rounds, just so you understand, is a completely arbitrary number. Like, we have revisited everything we've ever done in the sport, all the way down to what is a grounded fighter. We have revisited everything that we have done in this sport except for that. So we chose an arbitrary five rounds at 5 minutes apiece with 1 minute of rest. Arbitrarily, we chose this. The sport goes on, everything changed. We're fighting three guys in one night. Three guys became two guys. Two guys became one guy. And the whole reason for that is because guys got better, so you couldn't do that many matches. But they kept the rounds that were arbitrarily chosen. And I'm only sharing for you that it's been a surprise for me. And it's been a surprise because it's a hard argument to make. There is no other sport where when you get to the big one, they change the time. There is not a 100-yard dash when the gold medal's on the line that you go 105 yards. The Super Bowl, when it's the big one, has not become five quarters. The World Series, Game 7, they do not put an extra inning. I'm just sharing for you, in any sport, if you change one rule, you've now changed the sport. Period. What's the difference between basketball and soccer if you had to come up with a big one? Now let's just take soccer and everybody that's great at soccer. What if you could hit the ball with soccer? What if you were allowed 3 times per game? But you could hit it with your hand and it wasn't a violation, right? But that'd be great. And you could see where that would be interesting, but you also see where that's not soccer. You could see where the greats that you have might not be the greats. You could see where the greatest player in the NBA is not the one that goes out and wins a slam dunk contest. Like, a slam dunk is one element of the game. If you change any part, you now have something different. Can we agree on that? And I say that because as I look at Oliveira versus Sarkarian, if that is in fact a number one contenders match, is there an argument that it should be 5 rounds? If the finals match is going to be 5, I mean, there's a lot of things that you're testing right now. You're testing if the guy can be ready to do something different than what it is you're contending him for. Now, this is unique to our sport. No other sport does this. Boxing, that doesn't do anything right, doesn't do this. But it's the way that it is. It's been accepted. If you fight for titles, it's 5 rounds. It's an accepted thing. But if you're asking to see if a guy can qualify, if a guy can do it, the hardest thing to do is that. You would be stunned how few of fighters. Go look at just the Hall of Fame list. I mean, just really break it down to the Hall of Fame. Don't bother going back and looking at every fighter that's ever done. Just look at who's in the Hall of Fame. It's a real small group. You will be stunned at the percentage of Hall of Famers that are in the 5-round club. You probably think it's all of them. No, it's not. All of them at some point have been scheduled for 5 rounds. Go out and see who's actually done it. So you really are testing somebody. You really are checking somebody. Not just for the punches, just for the kicks. When you add 70% and now you're doing something different, and I'm only asking you, should a number one contenders match, should we have a new policy? Should we make all number one contenders? I mean, Dustin Poirier just did it over the weekend with St. Denis. For some reason, that was a 5-round fight. And had it been 3 rounds, like it should have been, like the policy, and like every other non-title fight that very night, we would have a different outcome. And I only bring that to you to just really prove my point that you're doing something different. Just like the slam dunk contest, you're like those same guys. You change the rules, you have something different. Poirier versus St. Denis. Had you changed the rules, or rather not changed them, you would have something different. That shouldn't be a surprise. And I'm just asking a question, by the way. I don't have an answer. I don't have a final analysis. But I would like to know what you think. I want to know if you see the difference. If you see the distinction. If we're going to have championship matches with championship implications, it would seem like all other sports, we would play them the same. The very example of the Super Bowl. To get to the Super Bowl, we're going to do the same thing there that we're going to do in the Super Bowl. So, would we change it? To get to the Super Bowl, should you just play the first half and then in the Super Bowl, you play both halves? I mean, I'm just asking you, if we're going to be in line, what do you think of that? And what do you think about Oliveira and Sakarian being a number one contenders match? If you like that idea, if that sounds right to you, and I think that's the direction we're going, do you think, moving forward, if you had the power, would you make number one contenders matches 5 rounds? That's my question. Leave me a comment below. Bo Nickel, Cody Brundage. Here's the question. Okay, because this got moved. This got moved, and like BJPenn.com, just for example, they did an entire article, and so I read the article, said I don't think there's news here. So let me just tell you what happened. Bo Nickel had a placement on the main card of 300. He still has placement on the main card of 300, but it has been moved. He's now going to open the main card. And this became a story. I'm not seeing it. That's the part that I don't understand. Now, there's been a number of things that are beliefs within our industry that I didn't know. And it stuns me when I didn't know. I mean, I feel like I've just been around long enough and seen it all, heard. I got hit with 1 2 weeks ago. George Masvidal called me crotch sniffer. I had never heard the term. So, okay. When I was doing Submission Underground and we were doing grappling events, we had this one event and it was awesome. And for our next event, we could not sell tickets. I felt like there was a mistake at the ticketing company So I called them as a customer to go through the process to see what the general public was going through, to find out what the glitch was. And that does happen sometimes. They'll miss here and they'll tell you it's sold out. There's a WEC event that ended up having to sue Ticketmaster. Well, when they said WEC, the people weren't trained well enough and they thought they were hearing WWE. And the WWE was sold out, but not the WEC. I mean, I'm just sharing for you. Like, there's mistakes that happen. Well, it turns out, so again, I held an event, okay? It's for the next event. On the event that I held, I had a purple belt that competed later in the evening than a black belt. And that, within the community of grappling and jiu-jitsu specifically, was so disrespectful. No one had told me. I did not know that. They had formed an online boycott. They had formed an online boycott because of the disrespect. Now, I'm only telling, this is back in 2014. I'm only telling you that sometimes there's lessons learned. And I may not like that, but at the same time, I need to know that. Right? If I decide I want to rock the boat, that's very different than not having the information in the first place. So, whether Bo Nickel was supposed to be the third fight of the night or the second fight of the night, and the mere fact that he's the first fight of the night, and I don't get it. I don't see it. I mean, it looks pretty good to me. And I don't even know that there's a big thought that went into it. There is something that went into it. Now, there's a reason. There is a reason that that got moved. Bo was supposed to fight after Oliveira. So, is this a declaration that the Oliveira fight is going to be named a number one contenders match? I think that was probably coming anyway. I'm not ready to say if that is what this is about. I do believe if Oliveira loses, that that gentleman will be fighting for the title. Islam has said as much. Now, Islam has also said that he's open with just like Poirier and he'll take him right now. But I think that Poirier and Gaethje should be reserved for each other in a BMF rematch. My own opinion. But could that have anything to do? And is that more than could it just have something to do? Is that the entire reason? Is that why Bo got moved? Is it a kind of a story like Chael went through with the black belt situation? Does somebody at the UFC, meaning Dana, believe that his number one contender should not fight before two guys that are just going out to fight, right? I mean, Bo Nickel and Gundridge, entertainment, test them. You could apply plenty of words, right? You don't have to be a hater. There's reasons, but there's nothing on that affects the rankings or reflects a number one contenders match or reflects title implications. So, like the grappling example I gave, does Dana believe that he should not have a number one contenders match followed by a match with less at stake? I'm just asking. I'm asking because any policy at the UFC is extremely important that we identify. When we're over here and we're trying to guess what's going to happen or we're making predictions, it's not from a perspective of what do we think is going to happen. What are we hearing? Let's get our ear to the grindstone. When we come out with a guess or a prediction of what we think is going to happen, that mean what do we guess or predict Dana is going to do? It's not how we feel. We're guessing and trying to predict how he feels. So if there's ever a policy, it's really important that we identify it. I mean, we did a good job over here. I got to tell you, we did not get the main event right, but nobody did. Jamal himself told us 2 days before the announcement is when the conversation came in. So there was no room for leaks, right? There was no room for us to get to the bottom of it. And nobody did. There was no headline anywhere where people were guessing that. But boy, we got a lot of it right. I mean, from Jump Street, people were saying it was going to be Connor versus Chandler. And from Jump Street, no, it won't. Not only no, it won't, but here's why it won't. 300, will be capped off by a title match. Title fights by policy, not by rule. This is not a rule of the Nevada State Athletic Commission or any other commission. It's a policy of the organization that a title fight goes last. And if there's two title fights on the card, they will go by weight class, and whoever is heavier will go last. I share that with you because once we start to learn these policies, boy, they stick around for 20 years. They just don't change them very often. So if there is some kind of a new policy where a contender's match has got to go before a less significant match, I mean, I'm just sharing for you. There's something to be gathered from this. And BJ Penn thinks that they know it. BJPenn.com did an entire article on this, so they think that they know it, but they took for granted that we knew it because they never laid it out. BJ Penn might be right. I might be missing. It might be right in front of my face. But there is a reason that these two matches were flip-flopped in order. There's a reason that a press release came out to let us know that they were flipped in order. I don't know what it is. It has me very curious. They asked Bo Nickel. Bo did not know. Bo gave an answer, but he said, I guess. He said, I'm guessing I sell more pay-per-views than the other guys. I mean, he said it as a question. And then Bo even said, he goes, there's some reason that I'm on that portion of the card. So we've always been told that more people watch the main event of the undercard on free TV, that's the premier spot. I know the appearance is otherwise, but the actual numbers support that. But Bo was saying, Bo didn't know. I fully appreciated Bo's answer on that. But if somebody knows, I'm curious. And if it is in fact a policy, it's only responsible that we identify what it is. Everybody, that is it for today's episode. Thank you for listening to today's show. And I also would like you to check out my new program with DC. Wherever you're going to listen to that, we thank you. That's called Good Guy, Bad Guy. And remember, if you're a Google Podcast listener, it's time to switch over to somewhere else. I'm going to be back with more on Friday, everybody. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.